Hello and welcome to Talent and Titan, a podcast for current and future leaders in the advertising, digital, and design spaces. Talent and Titan is produced by Creative Niche, an innovative staffing, recruitment, and executive search firm in downtown Toronto. You can find Creative Niche on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Creative Niche or at the website creativeniche.com. I'm your host, Christian Gilbert, and today on the show, I will be speaking with Colin Mansell. Colin is the founder and CEO of Red Academy, a new digital media and tech school where students can learn UX design, digital marketing, web development, and more. Red has locations in Vancouver, Toronto, and come October 10th in London, England. You can keep up to date with everything Red at redacademy.com. So I hope you stay tuned for my conversation with Colin Mansell, where we talk about Red, sailing, the importance of having fun, and much more coming up next.
Classical music originally, found out that that wasn't kind of the path I wanted to go, and studied sound engineering, which is kind of good, but I don't know if it's a really like worth a bachelor's title for learning how to record sound and stuff. But yeah, it was all of that stuff was around when MP3s were hitting the music industry. So sort of by virtue of that, I wrote my dissertation about that, and that was like the first industry to really get hit by the new internet, new digital age.
Right.
So it's like that was kind of a case study for everything that would happen in the media industry next. And then like, you know, like things like information, so MOOCs, knowledge, learning, like everything gets changed by the internet. You know? So
yeah.
It was like the first thing where I was like, ah, that's kind of interesting.
So were you a musician?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Originally.
A classical musician?
I was a classically trained baritone, actually. So I was,
Like saxophone?
No, baritone singing. So I was like a classical singer.
Wow.
And, well, I was really, I mean, to be honest, that was the thing at school that I was able to get away with pretty much doing no work, because I'd show up and do some like classical music concert. And they were like, well, I can't kick him out because the prospective parents think that we do all of this kind of wonderful music stuff. So, yeah, so anyway, so I was more sort of like, drawn towards music for it, the creativity that it allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think I'm probably creating in a lot of ways now, just not using audio, just using businesses and changing the world.
That's
and
very
little
cool.
Bits and pieces. Yeah, yeah.
So what brings you to Toronto? You just got off, you're coming from the airport, you said?
No, I am Toronto. So here with, you know, we've got Red Academy Vancouver, Red mm-hmm. Academy Toronto is now almost a year old, and actually an amazing team here that's kind of been building stuff for the last, the full new team has been going for about 6 months, but just so good to be here for the energy that these guys have got, and the stuff that they're doing is just like, it's really... Because I've just come from London, where we're opening the third school, and I've kind of not been in Toronto for 6 months. So it's really nice to see the kind of the evolution and how much they've kind of brought things forward and are doing like really, really cool stuff here.
Yeah. So is the school in London open now?
Or yeah. Well, opening? No, officially we're not open yet. Officially we open October the 10th, I think, is the first classes start. But they're...
No, I just said soon.
Soon, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, so we're on Aldwych, which is kind of like right next to London School of Economics and right in the middle. So it's sort of between, you know, St. Paul's Cathedral and Big Ben the other side. So we're right in the middle of London, and actually working inside of WeWork. So lots of other kind of young startups and tech companies. And, you know, so it's a really vibrant community in which you could be learning. So,
well, yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is.
How long has that been in the works for?
So the first Red Academy opened in September 2015. So we've been going for just coming up to 2 years now. So we've we graduated 1,100 students already. So in web development, app development, UX design, UI, digital marketing, and getting into that sort of augmented reality, virtual reality space, and you know, like looking at blockchain and AI and what all those things are going to do. So I added the second school here in Toronto just over a year ago, and then the third school. So really, we're adding a school every year. And the idea, the long-term vision, is kind of a network of schools around the world that, you know, students are working on real-world impact projects. So they're working with charities and community groups and impact organizations. So, you know, RED is real education and development. So you're learning kind of the skills and the tools that we're using in industry. Mm-hmm. But we're also trying to develop people in sort of getting them a sense of that, you know, you're not just a factory worker, you're not just here to join the massive society, but you're actually here to contribute something in the world. And, you know, by connecting them with people that are, it kind of, you get a little, like, a few glints in the eye and sparks that are happening and people going, ah, right, I could maybe build my own thing, you know, or realize how good it makes you feel to actually contribute something and be doing something positive in the world. And so, you know, throughout that process, we're A, giving the students a portfolio that's very practical and will get them a job, but also kind of doing good in the world and giving those students a chance to contribute themselves. And I think it's sort of like a big development piece for individuals as well. So, yeah. So long-term view, looking at, like, you know, network of schools, people able to travel, a global fellowship that they do, you know, a UX program in Toronto, UI in Vancouver, do a digital entrepreneurship program in London. And then we're partnering with accelerators and incubators in places like Africa and India and starting to look at volunteer programs and then, you know, making one-year programs that people then can study
wow.
all our various locations. Yeah, that's the...
And did you have this kind of long-term vision when you first opened this first school in Vancouver, or is this kind of just...
I mean, I think the education model came from actually my older brother, who's dyslexic, and he got shit all the way through school.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not dyslexic, and I was pretty lazy, and I didn't get any shit going through school, right? So I could see that I was getting the grades, but my older brother's just as smart. He just happens to not follow this same, you know, judged method of what we think intelligence is. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that, I mean, graduating from school, that both of us have done very well in our careers. And, you know, like, actually there is no relationship between the grades in school and whether you succeed. In fact, Richard Branson and, you know, Steve Jobs, like, there's so many examples of people that are either dyslexic or left school and never finished the program, were the rebellious ones at school. They were disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
And then disruptive is the one thing that we want our entrepreneurs to be in society, yeah. right? So there's a total mismatch. So that idea was always, like, from a young age, it's kind of like school is broken. School is like a bunch of people that have been out of industry that are teaching the old stuff, that don't really know what's going on in the industry. And it can be done better. So, you know, I was running an agency in Vancouver, and the aha moment was one of my developers who'd been with us for 3 months, probation conversation to say, you know, like, great, we love what you're doing, you can stay, you know. And he said, you know, well, you know, I just want to say thanks because I learned more in my first 3 months on the job than I did in my 5 years of comp sci education.
Right.
And I was just like, okay. There's something really broken here, right? Yeah. Like, if in 3 months we can do more than somebody, like, learn in 5 years in the professional setting of education, then maybe there's something really broken and something that's due to be, like, replaced. So, you know, in the same way that the music industry has changed, newspapers, they've radically changed, TV stations are not what they were, you've got Netflix, you've got, companies like Microsoft, they built Encarta and it got totally replaced by Wikipedia, which is a free network model. Mm-hmm. Massive hotel companies like Hilton are getting disrupted by Airbnb, which took 2.5 years to get to the same size as a company that took 70 years to get there. So we're living in an age where that technology actually allows for rapid disruption of massive, massive industries that were traditionally controlled by a small number of people.
Right.
And they just get, you know, disrupted by this kind of new network digital model. It's all much faster moving, can scale much quicker. And I think ultimately it's what, you know, the millennials and the Gen Z, the people that are coming through now, that's how they learn, that's how they live. So, you know, it's time for education to kind of catch up with
that. Yeah. So disruption is a good thing, it sounds like.
God, yeah. God, yeah. You should train that.
Absolutely.
Be
like,
you haven't caused any trouble. You at the back. You should be causing more trouble disrupting the class.
I 100% agree, yeah. It would make it a lot more fun too, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, I think there's a, you know, thing even about, like, having fun being sort of like seen as a sort of like, well, no, you're at school, you're there to learn.
which is so weird.
It's so weird
when you
right?
think about it. Yeah,
because if you're having fun, you're engaged, your intrinsic motivation is there, your attention levels mm-hmm. are much higher. And we're sort of starting to see that with game theory, is what it's called in education, you know. And it's actually like, you mean games, you know, you mean playing, you mean stuff that kids do naturally anyway. Yeah. Well, it's just that, that's how, like, Finland got rid of all subjects and all grades below the age of 16. And I think the story is like, it's great. They were like a highly regulated education system, and they were like literally at the bottom. They were like the worst in the world. And they just basically said, let's throw out the entire model that we have right. now and replace it with something that's just completely radical. And like, let's just not think of any boundaries in how we tackle it. So they got rid of all grading till you're 16. You basically don't really learn in a structured way until you're like maybe 7 or 8 years old. You can basically go outside and play in the forest, and they consider that learning.
Wow.
And it turns out that people do learn like that. You know?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Kids, they want to read a book by lying on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, that's how people want to read. That's how they will read, you know? Like, and we're constantly saying, here, sit at this desk and read. And they're like, I want to go and lie on the floor. But they will read when they lie on the floor. So they got rid of the desks. And said, yeah, the desks
it
are wrong.
It seems so obvious when you hear something like that, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So do you have a bit of that approach at Red, do you think?
I mean, we have, you know, it's an open plan environment. Yeah, there's couches. It's like it feels much more like a tech startup, because tech startups have also figured out people don't want to work in cubicles. They want to work where there's place to go and play ping pong. Mm-hmm. There should be a beer tap. There should be socials on Friday nights. You know, there should be a sense of social community in the building, and that's actually much more important than people realize, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, the schools are intentionally small, intimate. There's a lot of team building, a lot of personal development, a lot of like looking at team dynamics, getting people to kind of, you know, actually one of the most important things in a learning environment is that people feel safe. And so if they don't feel that, you know, if they feel like they put their hands up and people are going to laugh at them.
Yeah.
And that tends to happen in very large environments, like in university.
I felt like that all the time in university.
Yeah. 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 Like the big lecture hall where it's mm-hmm. like, okay, who has the right answer? And you know that, like, it's usually like there's one correct answer, which in life also isn't true, you know?
Right.
It's actually, there aren't, you know, it's not that the answer is in the back of the book for life.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you actually, who can come up with the best answer?
Yep. Or best perspective, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And who can learn to see the new perspective? The world is changing. Who can kind of visualize what it's going to look like so that you can build businesses, solutions, services, new ideas? And I mean, you know, in this day and age, you know, like the biggest companies in the world, they all came from a creative idea, like social media, which mm-hmm. they may not have, Facebook didn't invent that, but they executed a great idea exceptionally well. It's the same with Google as a search engine that didn't exist, you know, 25 years ago. The idea of a search engine, didn't have an internet yet. You know, other examples, Airbnb is completely like somebody going, hey, wouldn't it be crazy if you did this thing?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So actually, the most valuable thing in our economy is an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, a new idea can be worth billions of dollars if you execute it well. But at school, we don't want people to come up with ideas. We want them to give us the answer that's in the back of the book. So kind of like, there's an interesting study that I read that like they got you know, some kind of object and they gave it to like 5 and 6 year olds and said, oh, what are the different applications you can come up with for this object?
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with like 200 different ideas. You know, some of them like, oh, it could be a rocket ship, or, you know, it could be a space tunnel, or it can be, you know, and kids have got so much imagination. And then they tested the same test at 15 and 16 year olds, and they could only find 10 applications because they've literally had their creativity and imagination just shut down every step of the way.
Yeah.
And it's the very thing that we actually need in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the education system is still built on an industrial mindset in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some changes happening, but in a lot of cases it's still like, if you don't have the right answers, we're going to give you this grade. And people still think, oh, if I have that A grade, then I'm going to get into university, then I'm going to get the top job, and then I'm going to find happiness.
Right.
And that's not true. Like, actually, the people that get the A's, they end up not being entrepreneurial, they're not creative, they're not able to see what the next Google or Facebook or the next Amazon might be. They're looking to work for somebody else that does. And usually that person got the C grade and was outside, yeah, like playing in the trees or
right,
coming up with, you know, new interesting ways of doing stuff that, mm-hmm, wouldn't have been even witnessed in the education system. It would have been invisible, you know?
Yeah, totally. I read that you did a big sailing trip from Vancouver to Alaska.
I did.
Is that true? Was that a big, you know, outside of the classroom kind of learning experience for you?
I mean, it's definitely like you learn about yourself. Like,
yeah,
it's because, I mean, I sailed a little bit. Like, I taught sailing. That's actually where my sort of like teaching experience was, mostly like between 16 and 20. I taught sailing every summer back in Holland. And so I was an okay sailor. Like, I'd sailed on the lakes, but definitely, yeah, not sailed any like oceans or up to, you know, the northern, you know, up into Alaska. But yeah, that was sort of eight years ago now. So when I moved here with my girlfriend at the time, and we, mm-hmm, sort of spent 8 years working in London and kind of, you know, done my time there, and was looking for really a way to get out of the grid, you know, like get off grid and just go and do something completely different. And so I found a sailing boat that was for rent in BC, and I sort of, okay, well, it was actually for sale, and I sort of managed to talk the owner into letting me rent it for the summer to see whether I would be interested in buying, yeah, it. And he fortunately went along with it. So, you know, but pretty crazy experience of, you know, getting this little sailing boat and, you know, 2 weeks in blowing up the main engine and having to rig a, wow, little 9.9 horsepower engine onto the side of it and still carrying on. And then, you know,
yeah, like
breaking the boat almost a few times. But I mean, very much an experience of, you know, I mean, here in Canada, you guys are used to seeing bears and whales and orcas, and, mm-hmm, you know, that stuff is normal. But when you're in Europe, we don't have any predators. We don't have any big animals.
There's, right,
nothing we killed those thousands of years ago. Yeah. It's like, so it was an amazing experience to get out of the big cities and actually, you know, you literally will go 2 days without seeing a human being on that coast.
Wow.
That's pretty special.
Yeah.
And you learn a lot of, like, you know, self-confidence, I think. You know, you go, oh, I can actually do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long did that take? And did you actually make it all the way?
Yeah, I made it all the, wow, way, like, amazingly. And it's sort of like, I still use that a lot in, like, analogies for leadership and how to organize, you know, businesses. Still very much about, you know, you might say, oh, I want to get to Alaska. Like, people say, you know, mm-hmm, they have these outlandish claims of what they're going to do as an entrepreneur. I want to impact 10 million people. And of course, it's not really about that. It's not about getting to Alaska. The only thing you need to do is, like, leave the harbor. Because,
right,
that day, you're just going to sail to the next little harbor, which that's,
right,
only 30 kilometers away. That's doable. So actually, any journey is not about the destination. Because if you just think about the destination, it's too big, right?
Yeah.
It was something like, I think we did almost 5,000 kilometers in total in 4 months. So it was like 3 months up, 1 month down.
Wow.
And all on a little like 9.9 horsepower engine that should,
should
not. And all the way along, like, people going, you can't go to Alaska in that boat. And then I'd always ask, you know, so how far have you been? As the immediate response.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh, well, you know, I've just been two islands up. And it's like, okay, thanks for your advice.
Yeah.
But if somebody said, like, I've been to Alaska and that is going to get you killed, then I'd be like, okay, you will listen to, you know?
Yeah.
But there's so many people who will tell you that what you're trying to do is not possible. And, like, actually, you just need to keep going. It's all just, like, I think the biggest lesson. I saw this Elon Musk quote as well the other day saying exactly that, you know? It's just about perseverance. It's just, if you just keep going, then, mm-hmm, you get there. So actually, that's kind of the biggest lesson in life. It's not about intellect. It's not about your educational background. It's not about who you know. It's about the unwillingness to quit.
Right.
It's just like, keep going. Just, yeah, keep going. And it's that unstoppability. That's what all successful entrepreneurs have. Is, and anybody that makes a success of anything, is just an absolutely unwillingness to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get knocked down. Fine. That's part of it.
Yeah.
I'm getting back up again and we'll go again, you know. Your engine blows up, fine, we'll put on a new engine.
Yeah.
Your mast almost breaks, you're like, we can probably learn how to fix that,
mm-hmm,
you know? And yeah, so lots of lessons in that. And
for sure.
Unreal experience, like, unreal.
It's funny too, because I feel like when you do run into those obstacles, you know, they're never as bad as you imagine that they're going to be,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, it's quite right. We actually we have sort of like these learning values that we pull from the Wizard of Oz, and you know, heart, brains, courage. And
okay.
This is another great like learning story, you know, about how education really works. Because at the end of the day, like everybody, they have these kind of fears of saying I'm not good enough, right? Like in fact, the system teaches us that we're not good enough. Like I was taught, you're not a good artist, so I stopped drawing, you know. And actually, recently, I've sort of started drawing a bit, and like, I'm okay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not that bad. Like, but I was graded like, you know, B or a C because there were people that were just amazingly gifted at
right.
it and had it straight off the bat. But I mean, ultimately, all of our talents are simply, they're within us. It's just that we didn't need to develop them. So like the, you know, the lion, he's got no courage. So, but he joins along for the journey anyway. And the tin man, he's got, what is it? No heart. And the straw mm-hmm. man, he's got no brain.
Yep.
But they still go on this massive journey and they get to the Wizard of Oz, who's like meant to be the Wizard of Oz, like this big, like the, it is that fear, right? That's what that represents, is that, but it turns out it's just like a little man behind a curtain who doesn't represent anything, and that they already had the heart, the brains, and the
right.
courage within them. So, you know, I think that's like a really nice metaphor for learning, is actually that no one's going to give you the piece of paper. There isn't a Wizard of Oz at the end of anybody's learning journey or career. It's actually all within us, what we choose to build and mm-hmm. design for ourselves in the world. And I think that's going to happen more and more. That's going to become evident, you know, like, you know, artificial intelligence is going to replace a lot of jobs, right? Like that's happening right now. Like there's, I was at a conference where Uber, their chief product officer, unlikable bunch, but you know, the business model of like, it was literally stood there and said, we're at 2 million employees now, we're going to go to 5 million and then we're going to put them all out of a job.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's pretty incredible.
That actually, is incredible.
I sort of afterwards tapped him on the shoulder and said, you know, how can you sort of tell that story and not feel like that's kind of wrong? Because mm-hmm. you've effectively built a $100 billion company, but off the backs of other people that you're now going to just replace. And he sort of turned around and said, well, actually, it's you that did it. And I was like, what? So I kind of said, well, you know, elaborate. And which I thought, and it was quite challenging kind of, he was definitely had heard the questioning line before because he's very well versed in his mm-hmm. response. But he sort of said, look, if we don't replace our drivers, then Lyft will. And if you've got solar powered grid, right, so the energy is effectively abundant, so the cost of electricity is going to come right down. You recharge these vehicles, they don't have a driver. So after the capital investment of the vehicle, if you pay that out over 10, 15 years, the costs actually of running an autonomous vehicle off the grid is almost zero. So if you put a human being in that car to
yeah.
drive you around, actually it's like, you know, it would be $30 to do, I don't know, a 40-minute journey or whatever mm-hmm. it is. But if you did it in the solar autonomous vehicle, it would be 50 cents. So you as the customer, what would you choose? And
yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, he's onto something. So it's kind of, it's progress. It's like society will just do that. And whether we can protest about it and we can have unions and we can have a big, like, you know, argument as to whether it should or shouldn't be happening. But
mm-hmm.
the fact is it is happening. And you know, I think that as these jobs get replaced, everybody needs to, it's not like you have a right to a job anymore. It's not that you have a
right
to a salary. It's not that, you know, you actually have to go and prove your value. And that is the way that you earn money in this economy. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily seem fair or right. In other ways, it's actually more of a meritocracy, as in, like, you know, if you're good at what you do, you will get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, from the society that came out of the industrial age, is kind of like, well, if you know the boss of the factory, then you get a job in management. Whereas if you're a blue collar worker, then you're working in the pit.
Right.
You know? And so I actually think in many ways, this new economy model is a much fairer way of recognizing people that are really contributing. But, you know, there's a lot of change. A lot of change.
Yeah. And I feel like people are always a little bit resistant to change, or very
oh, yeah.
resistant. But I think you're right too, that it's kind of inevitable.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
Whether it's a little slower or.
It's know. The train is moving, right?
Yeah.
Like you can either say, I don't want it to move, but it is, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah.
If you are a talented, creative person who is looking for more work or opportunity, I would please urge you to check out creativeniche.com/jobs. Creative Niche posts jobs every single week, so make sure to revisit the page often. There, you will find current job openings that match your particular skill set and interests, such as social media, digital and mobile, content development, creative, production, and so much more. Creative Niche posts jobs from all over Canada, the United States, and England, so there is a good chance that there's something for almost anyone, including yourself. Once again, that is creativeniche.com/jobs. Stay tuned for more with Colin Mansell.
We're only alive for a short period of time, really, and what are we going to do while we're here? And as I say, you can build a business and you can employ some people, and that's very satisfying to see. You know, I might remember my first employees taking like a proper long holiday, and they're actually like, they've met at work and they're now married. Oh, they're getting married soon. And they're like, there's a kind of little pride of place that you go, wow, I sort of helped that all come together, and now they're on holiday and they're enjoying themselves and they've got this life that's now, you know, exists, well, not exists, but they have access to opportunities because of what we created with that company. But I mean, in education, it's literally, I mean, I was just sitting at a restaurant where, you know, 9 months ago, I was sitting in that restaurant and the waitress came up to me and I was wearing a red t-shirt and she's like, oh, are you from Red? I'm going to study UX there.
Right.
So that waitress is now a UX designer on $55,000 at one of the big, like, award-winning, like the top agency, top digital agency in Canada. And she went back to that restaurant and is now building their website for them if she can fit them in.
Yeah. You know?
And it's like,
that's
so when you
wild.
See stuff like that, it's really, yeah. really cool, you know? It's really something. It's you know that the people who really, and it's also about, you see people that really connect with that thing of like, it's wait, the world isn't gonna hand me a piece of paper that will get me a job and go and work for it. Doesn't, it's not, if I put the effort in and I commit to my own personal learning journey and I commit to wanting the things that I want for myself, that I'm going to have that unstoppability, I'm going to have that mindset of like, I can make this happen for myself. It's almost that side of the development of people that's more rewarding than seeing them get a job. Because it's ultimately, I think we've been trained to think that, oh, I can buy, you know, I can go pay my university fees and get a degree and that will get me a job. We've been trained to think that we can buy our seat at the table. And it just doesn't work like that. It actually works. The people that are committed will work hard, are super interested, want to add value. And they're the people that ultimately succeed. And it's the people that kind of wake up to that during the process that you're like, cool, they're gonna go, you know, you now know that person is gonna go and do something really big. So that's kind of like the
So it's more of a merit kind of based
absolutely
system.
Yeah, I mean, like at the end of the day, if you have somebody, you walk into your agency and they say, oh, I've got this piece of paper from Oxford or Cambridge or blah blah blah, you're like, okay, but maybe that makes you overqualified for this job. If they come in and say, you know, I built this website for this company and this is how I did it and I know how to use this software, and if I'm a, you know, web design company, I'm like looking for that. And it's
absolutely.
Like, well, show me, and how did you figure that out? And how did you work with the client? And did you, you know, did you ask the right questions? Were you sort of like going through a consultative process with them? Do you know how to work with a client? Or are you one of those designers that goes, oh, you're a client, you know nothing. I am the artist in the room here. And then it's like, yeah, because those kind of designers, they might be wonderful and produce beautiful work, but ultimately, like, it's actually the ability to work with a client that's more important than your ability to be the world's top artist or whatever, you know. That's yeah.
So when you left Drive Digital, was it?
Yeah.
To start Red, what was the reaction from your coworkers, and were people supportive, or did some people think you were crazy? Or
a lot of people thought I was crazy. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, I was working with John and Chris, who run Success Marketing. You know, exceptional entrepreneurs. They've built a really successful business. Success is now open in they're in Vancouver, Toronto, New York. And you know, I started Drive in partnership with them, so I was sort of like, you know, fairly new in Vancouver, like, what was it, maybe 3 years on the ground there, 4 years. Yeah, I had my permanent residency, so whatever that was. And I sort of said, yeah, we should set up this business together, and we grew it in 3 years to maybe 25 people. And at that point, it was like, guys, we should also start a school. And they were like, Colin, we've got two companies and admire your ambition, but you're crazy. It's too many businesses, but like we can see that you're really passionate about it. So why would you consider, you know, selling your stake in Drive to us? And I was like, well, actually, that'd be super interesting because that then gives me capital to really like build right. something bigger. So, you know, it allowed us to open 5,000 square feet and have three programs, and we opened with 40 full-time students. So it was a much bigger, and it was mm-hmm. actually like, that was a blueprint for a red, was just like, okay, you have this group of 40 people who really get to know each other incredibly well, which is kind of the secret sauce with red, you know, is the community and the relationships that are built between the people. But yeah, no, I mean, like, Drive is still run by a really good friend of mine, Miles. He's we actually met at a music festival like the year before I started Red, and I was just like, wow, he's running a pub. He's like 23 or something, but he's like super smart guy. And we were talking about, I think, artificial intelligence and the nature of consciousness, as you do at a music festival. And I was just like, wow, he can like totally hold his own on this stuff. And he's 23 right. and he's like managing one of the busiest pubs. And I was like, that's a big company that's put a 23-year-old in charge of a busy, busy pub. Mm-hmm. I was like, but you know, if he's a talker, he knows how to win over clients, you know. So like, so, you know, a few months after that, I offered him that job. But I mean, you know, I think that everybody at Drive could see that what I like doing is building and growing things. And I'm sort of like known to be a little bit, you know, I guess the creative type who likes to just go and like be in the creative or the creating of business, of creating new things. Yeah. And that like once it gets starts getting really systematic and operational, then I'm like twiddling my thumbs going, let's go and build another thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, okay, let's get him out here because he's a distraction. Yeah. So I think, you know, it, in many ways, like starting the school was... It was a really exciting new thing to do, and you know, like it's nice to sort of to grow something and to exit it and to leave it in safe hands, you mm-hmm. know, to really to know the company's still there, that all the people that are working there, that you kind of like a little bit inside you goes, you know, that the work that I did back then means that these people now have like an awesome company that they work at, and it's like
yeah.
it's such a cool vibe in there, super proud of the work that they do. And just like just an amazing group of people, just yeah. So there's a little point of pride that you kind
for
of
sure.
have moved on, but they're still it's like yeah. a child, you know. It's like
absolutely
off in the universe doing their own thing, and haven't they grown? I'm so proud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Is that more of a measure of success for you than, you know, having a certain target or amount of staff or?
I mean, I think that question of success is a really. Yeah, I mean, that's a deeply personal thing for everybody, I think, mm-hmm. And something that you learn about sort of illusion, right? Because I know plenty of, on paper, very successful people that are, you know, are unhappy in their lives. They don't really know how they're meant to become happy. They've got lots of money, but, you know, they've got broken relationships. And so you start to see, well, you know, what would I rather have, a big pile of money, or would I rather have really, really great friendships?
Right.
And then you very, if you half know what you're doing, you know that the second one is much, much more important. So I think there's a point at which, yeah, funnily enough, I mean, I sold Drive and I just moved all of the money across straight into the new business account. And people say, well, did you not even like go out and celebrate? And I was like, well, no, you know, I had a couple of drinks with some friends and stuff. And they're like, but why did you not... you know, well, you should have taken money and gone on holiday first, you know, like,
right.
like, but, you know, it's just like, well, for me, the most celebratory thing I can do is go and start a new thing. And that's actually like the most enjoyment I can get is you know, putting that money into some kind of use. And I did at one point own an apartment and that didn't give me any joy at all, mm-hmm. like owning that thing. In fact, stuff kept breaking and kept having to go and fix stuff. And, you know, it's true what they say, like the things you own, they end up owning you.
Right.
It's much yeah. better to be, you know, putting that sort of money that you have into uses that provide the development of people or build relationships or lead to people discovering things about themselves that make them go and build stuff. You know, mm-hmm. that's kind of, I think I think that whole question of what success is in a massive state of flux. I think that, you know, Simon Sinek talks about start with why, and purpose-driven companies are now outperforming non-purpose driven companies. Oil right. companies are struggling to find people to get to them to come and work for them. Banks are mm-hmm. in big trouble because, you know, that actually the defensive things that protect the banks from other people opening banks are kind of falling away. Like blockchain is going to decentralize and democratize the financial system. And so, you know, I think that people, and you see it especially in young people, that they're like, well, I don't really want the money and a big banking job and whatever. It's not that important. I want to go and, like, the oceans are full of plastic. I want to build something that's going to save that, or I want to figure out how to make solar and wind more of a thing, or I want to, yeah, you're just seeing, like, people connecting much more with something that's important to them than something that is traditionally considered success, because actually yeah. that thing isn't real, you know?
I yeah. It's, more about fulfillment, maybe.
Yeah, totally.
And do you think you're getting that from Red and what you're doing now?
Massively. Like, people sort of say, you seem to be, you know, there's to say, well, you know, because I sort of live between Vancouver and Toronto and London right now, and people say, well, do you think you'll settle? Where do you think you'll settle down? And I'm like, the word settling sounds like compromise, and down, it's not an up word, is it? It sort of seems to be like, where will you end up? That's another way that you sort of question the language. What do you mean, end? I'm in the journey right now, so I wouldn't classify what I'm doing really as work. It's actually, I couldn't think of it. If I went on holiday, I would just like be thinking, oh, you know what, we should open a school here.
Yeah.
Just be thinking, like, how can we create the next thing? So the most fun I can have is what I do. Like, it's mm-hmm. really, I mean, it's important to have downtime, but
for sure,
if you get energy from what you do, you don't need time away from it. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, super enjoyable.
So. Yeah, I've never thought of the phrase settling down in great depth, but it's pretty depressing when you think about it.
It is, right?
Yeah.
Also, another one, mortgage means death contract if you translate it from Latin.
Oh, really?
Death and contract. So, because you will be paying it off till
you're dead. For the rest of your life, yeah.
So that's a kind of question. If they called mortgages death contracts, where so many people would be sold into the you should buy a house, you should, like, be, you know, 2 weeks holiday every year, and, like, for the rest of it, you better be working to pay off that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think some of those bigger questions around what success is, what gives people happiness, what the purpose is of being alive, I think a lot more people are thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely also people discovering that all the fame and Instagram followers in the world ain't gonna make you happy, right? I think there's a lot of that sort of the Kardashians don't strike me as a particularly fulfilled or, you know, happy bunch. And I think that, yeah, you see people turning to sort of more traditional philosophies of, like, Buddhism and yoga, and
right.
people kind of finding these things are like, these Buddhists seem quite happy, but yeah. they don't want anything. Like, okay, so maybe is it, like, our relationship with wanting things that's the problem rather than actually getting the things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and people doing more work on themselves to kind of address those things, or asking big questions like, what does success mean to me, you know? Do I want the big house and the money, or do I just want a relationship and I want to go and see the world? Like, you know, mm-hmm. legitimate questions that should be asked. And,
absolutely. Yeah.
Growing up, I lived in different cultures, and you see, like, this group of people, they don't eat cows. That's, like, their yeah. thing. This group of people, they don't eat pigs, but they do eat cows, and they are absolutely sure that their guy told them that that's the thing, so therefore. But then you sort of see, well, this is groupthink, and this is groupthink, and actually mm-hmm. the answer, there's probably a reason why there is that, like, probably, like, the you know, pigs being unclean animals, or that you don't eat the cows for, I mean, for whatever reason it was. But ultimately, you're not thinking for yourself in either of those situations. So you start right. to kind of question, like, is there such a thing as objective truth? Right in the middle of it all, is there a truth? And then, on that subject of truth, I was sort of went to this meditation class when I was about 22. And there was this guy who sort of, like, he brought this, like, highly ordained Theravadan monk down from the monastery. And he's like this, you know, this beaming character who'd come down in his robes, and
mm-hmm.
you know, all of us, you know, early 20-year-olds, we were like super, like, oh, this is an enlightened being, you know, whatever, but, like, slightly in awe of this guy. And one of the guys with us, he goes, could you tell us about truth, you know, what is truth?
Big question.
And yeah, just start off with a nice, nice, easy one. Yeah, easy way into it. How was the taxi journey and what is truth? You know? So, you know, the monk kind of came back with this kind of like, almost like laughing, as he said, it's sort of in a very well, you know, loving kind of way. So it says, you know, I'm so glad that you're asking that question because it means that your journey in this world is going to be such a rewarding and fulfilling one. You know? And the guy was like, oh yeah, huh. And you can sort of see that he was not happy with that answer.
Right.
Like, there's definitely like, so the monk sort of says, you know, listen, I can see that wasn't quite the answer that you were looking mm-hmm. for. So I'll tell you this. I'll tell you that the truth is in the sunset. And I can try and describe in words what a sunset is. But the difference between my description and how you imagine that to be versus you actually going to see the sunset for yourself, I'm telling you the truth is in the sunset.
Wow.
So go and see the sunset. You know, as I think about faith or I think about like purpose, I don't consider myself a religious person, but I do witness being alive as quite an amazing thing, right? Like I think
absolutely,
like,
yeah.
And I think that it's kind of indisputable that we exist, right? Like we definitely mm-hmm. are experiencing the you know the existence. So whether we like it or not, we are created. Like we exist, and therefore we're created. And it is the universe that has created us on whatever, even the most scientifically dry yes. version of that, we definitely exist. And the universe is basically the thing that we must have come from because there isn't anything else apart from the universe. And so is that whole story of religion just a way of applying words that form a story that really say we were created from the universe, which you could call universe God and mm-hmm. call, you know, the people that recognize this stuff prophets. But is it just really that we're witnessing, you know, the awe of the universe, and that we recognize, I think, you know, through this, some of these kind of religious ideas that what makes us happy is by, you know, nurturing the ecosystem. It's by giving back
right.
to the things that we are also a part of and seeing that whole ecosystem develop and evolve. That's what gives us a sense of whether we're successful or not, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a realization that many people are sort of coming to.
Yeah, well, is there anything else that you wanted to kind of plug or talk about?
In terms of a plug, I guess, you know, like people are interested in exploring stuff like jobs in tech, then head to Red Academy. And, you know, we are a big family of people around the world that are mm-hmm. kind of trying to make a little bit of impact and provide people with the right skills to get jobs and be able to, you know, lead interesting lives and pursue the things that they want. So,
and the London school is opening October 10th?
It is indeed. Yeah, yeah. We will be up and running and coding programs starting in January. And yeah, and then we're looking at like international, like remote programming next year, which you know, like keep an eye on redacademy.com. We'll be doing some stuff, also maybe in Africa, some new stuff coming up next year. So,
wow. Yeah. Have you been to Africa before? Just
actually, the idea for Red came when I was a little...
Oh, that's right. That's
yeah,
right,
yeah. In South Africa. I was there. A friend of mine, he was like surfing there, but he's a web developer and he's working in a little town called East London. And his girlfriend, she was working in the township there, like helping to educate the kids. And they had like this really bad van, which had like these desktop computers in it. And I was like, ah, oh, man, you know, like, you know what should be the future of education? Rather than going to university and spending all this bloody money,
mm-hmm.
For the same money, you should rent a space at a beach break in South Africa, do a coding program there, while you're going to learn to surf in the morning because it's fun. And
yeah.
Like, you should like do stuff that is fun. And then you should go and work in the township in the evening and like teach what you've learned, whether it's like really, really simple, could even just be reading,
mm-hmm.
but whatever, learn how you can contribute, learn some useful skills that will pay the bills and learn some stuff that will, you know, be enjoyable and like do that around the world. I think like Africa and Bali is also kind of like another place that was very instrumental in the kind of formation of the vision of like building this network of schools around the world where people should be studying in places that are truly a learning environment, right? Like
mm-hmm.
that really are disruptive to your sense of what the world is. Well, go to the other side of the world and see how other people are living there. That's learning,
mm-hmm.
you know, like sitting in the same classroom in the same town where you grew up with people that are the same as you. You're not going to learn a lot.
Yeah, you kind of go into autopilot.
Yeah, totally.
In that situation.
Totally. It's like all the people that think, you know, you can't eat pigs or you can't eat cows or whatever. Yeah. It's all like maybe, and I'm not saying, you know, maybe you should be a vegetarian. I don't know. It's like everyone for themselves. But
yeah,
it's by getting out of your bubble, that's where you really learn.
That concludes my conversation with Colin Mansell. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or comments for myself or Colin, please don't hesitate to reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram at Talent and Titan. Don't forget to check out Red at redacademy.com and our sponsor, Creative Niche, on social media at Creative Niche and creativeniche.com. Finally, please make sure to comment, rate, and subscribe to Talent and Titan. I am your host, Christian Gilbert. Stay well until next time. Thank you for listening. And remember, the truth is in the sunset.